Great. Thank you very much. I'm very excited to have the chance to talk with you about some of the work we've been doing on tobacco retailers, but it also has a number of other applications to food environments, alcohol, and some other areas, which I'll talk about. Here are the disclosures from the work I'll be talking about is funded by several grants from foundations and federal groups. I've received honoraria over the past for giving talks on the issue of point-of-sale tobacco issues. There's a possibility we're forming a nonprofit to distribute the software that we're talking about that may lead to royalties, and I'm donating the first 2 years of royalties to student scholarships if that's the case. I'll be talking about using information technology and GIS mapping as a way to advance issues in the area of the number and density of tobacco retailers and the amount of advertising that appears at stores. In the area of tobacco control, the point of sale is really becoming a bigger and bigger issue because many other advertising venues have been restricted, so there are no more ads on TV, radio, billboards, bus ads, and so forth. And so the point of sale is where they're saturating and spending about 86% of their budget. So this is sort of one of the last big frontiers in tobacco control. I'll be talking about how we use some information technology to help advance public health policy in these areas. And this is just the side of a gas station that's just a block away from my office in Carrboro, North Carolina. You see lots and lots of tobacco ads. So one of the things that we really want to do is more rapidly accelerate evidence into practice. And so I'll talk in the very beginning of my talk about a couple of research studies, and I'll talk about how we're developing systems that helps ground-level practitioners more rapidly advance and take things that we're learning from the research studies into practice. This whole idea of the dissemination chasm, you probably heard about it. This is one of the biggest issues facing us. We know what, often in tobacco, a little bit less so in obesity and some other areas, but we know what to do. It's just getting this put into play is one of the sort of the bigger issues. So we're trying to make tools that help people. So, I'm really just talking about two things in my talk. I'm going to talk about the problem of tobacco product retailers near schools, which is an area that I'm dedicating the next 5 years to working on, and some solutions and tools for practitioners that help address this issue of stores near schools. A study was done by Chris Lovato in Canada, where she wanted to look at retail promotions and advertising in neighborhoods near schools. And she wanted to find schools that had very high smoking rates and very low smoking rates. And she wanted to see if the environments around these schools differ. So she had she looked at 81 schools, over 22,000 students. And then she did these student questionnaires of the students. And then she visited the stores that are near these schools. Okay, so it's a combination of student surveys and store audits. And she did 487 store audits. If you see the icon we have for the schools, the low prevalent schools have about a 15% smoking rate. The higher prevalent schools have a 26.9% smoking rate. And the key is, does the retail environment or the stores that are near these schools, is there any difference in those the environment? Because, again, there's this big push in public health for the built environment. So the stores that have the high smoking rates, you'll see on the right, were more likely to have in-store promotions, 55% versus about 36%. So they're more likely to have promotions. And these promotions include things like buy one pack of Marlboro, get one pack free, a dollar off per pack, or so forth. So these price promotions are the number one most important thing to the tobacco companies right now. So you're seeing a pretty big difference if the schools that had the high smoking rates are more likely to have price promotions. The price of cigarettes, and this was just on a per pack, they're divided by 20 because a pack of cigarettes has 20 cigarettes, was cheaper, 30 cents versus 40 cents. They were less likely to have government health warning signs. And on the final indicator, the density, there was no difference in this particular study. We'll see in some other studies that there is a difference. So this suggests that there is some evidence to be concerned about some of the stores near schools as being a potential environment that may contribute to smoking. Lisa Henriksen at Stanford did a study published a few years ago in Preventive Medicine where she wanted to look at the density of tobacco outlets and advertising in high school neighborhoods and whether that's related to school smoking prevalence. So like the other study, it was a cross-sectional study. She did 135 schools with over nearly 25,000 students. and she looked at this environment that's a half mile radius around the schools. And you can see in the graphic, you can have a school that has no retail outlets near it, a school that can have somewhere between 1 and 5, and those little blue dots are sort of icons representing potential tobacco retailers. Or there could be high. You could have actually 5 or more than 5 tobacco retailers. And she wanted to see, is the retailer density near schools related to smoking prevalence? And she found that, yes, it is related to smoking prevalence, so that in the areas that had the highest density of tobacco retailers, the smoking rates were several points higher than the areas with the lowest density. And this was found in urban environments. It wasn't found in rural environments. But you're seeing about a 3 percentage points higher smoking rate in the stores that have, in schools that have a greater number of retailers near schools. Before I give this talk, how many of you have thought much about the fact that we would let stores near schools sell cigarettes? Have many of you thought of this issue? So there's a good. So there's a handful. I'm hoping in a few years this is an issue that increases in salience. So are we paranoid, or is there some type of concerted industry threat that the tobacco industry literally is going to handing out cigarettes near schools or so forth? In fact, actually, years ago, there was and there still may be today, a major effort. This is an internal memo from R.J. Reynolds. They had a whole young adult program from the 1990s. What they did is they got all of their sales managers to focus on all of the tobacco retail outlets that are in the vicinity of high schools or college campuses. And they had special promotional programs for this. There's this whole series of documents on the website I'll show you in just a minute. We have a whole section called Stores Near Schools, and you can download the original documents you want. There's a whole series of other documents where they worked with billboard companies to find all the billboards that they could advertise on and put Joe Camel right near high schools and middle schools and so forth so they could reach kids. So there's been sort of a whole multi-year, they worked for several decades on trying to spend a lot of time on marketing and their products near schools. One of the things that the FDA is thinking about doing, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration now has authority over tobacco products, they've been thinking about maybe we could ban outdoor tobacco advertising near schools. And we wanted to see, there were some earlier studies that had shown that it would probably lead to a virtual ban on all advertising, because in urban areas, the schools are so close to the tobacco retailers that there's really nowhere the tobacco company. The tobacco companies argue there's nowhere that we could advertise, because about 90% of the land area would be off limits to our advertising. And so we did a study to see, based on a more recent data, if the FDA banned tobacco, either advertising or sales of the product near schools, how it would affect retailers in 2 states. We looked at New York, because it's a big state and highly urban, and then Missouri, which is a state that has about the same percent urban as about the rest of the United States. And so we looked at FDA's thinking about, they put out an advance notice of proposed rulemaking. They wanted input from the research community and practice community. If we were to ban ads 350 feet, 500 feet, or 1,000, how would that affect retailers? And indeed, would it be all retailers affected? And therefore, if you ban all outdoor advertising, it's kind of you're violating the First Amendment, which is what the tobacco companies would argue. We looked at, this is in St. Louis and Manhattan, we plotted, so you see little red dots. Those red dots are tobacco retailers. Looking on the left, you can kind of see that they're kind of clustered in the eastern part of town. If those of you from St. Louis will know, that's where the predominantly African-American part of town is, and there's a higher percent of low-income population there. The more wealthier white areas are in the western part of that picture. You can kind of just almost de facto see disparities right there. In the little inset diagram, you can see the schools are in blue, darker blue, and then the 1,000-foot buffer zone, which is the zone where no retailer could advertise or sell if these policies are put in place, is in light blue. And then dark green is a park, and the buffer zone, the forbidden advertising zone, is in light green. So you can kind of see some of the retailers are in the zone or not. And what we did this, you can also see in Manhattan, you can see Central Park, and you can again see whether the retailers are affected or not. We found, in fact, that in Missouri, about 22% of retailers would be affected by a 1,000-foot ban, and about New York, about 51%. So it wasn't going to be something that would ban all advertising. This, I think, is a very realistic policy that I think that we wrote on a advanced notice of proposed rulemaking. We had asked, recommended that FDA consider this 1,000-foot distance because we think this would not ban all advertising, but it would also have a potentially large public health impact. In fact, when you look at how many tobacco ads are on the outside of stores, we think it could reduce up to 1.5 million pieces of tobacco advertising, which is actually a pretty impressive feat. If any of you have ever tried to do voluntary things where you try and get stores to pull down advertising, or you've tried to do other local policies, in one swoop, you could potentially get rid of 1.5 million ads. It also would contribute to one of our Healthy People 2020 goals of reducing the amount of exposure to advertising of tobacco products, because that's also related to initiation of smoking. So we have a number of bans within 1,000 feet of schools. This idea of this sort of public health and safety zone around schools. We don't allow strip clubs to operate within 1,000 feet of schools, thankfully. My poor research assistant, I went to her and I said, okay, I'm going to give you a whole series of things. You got to give me an icon that's G-rated enough that I could show at APHA. So we don't have nuclear facilities. So the next one is a pedophile. And I was like, what is she going to come up with for a pedophile? But that's almost good enough. But we don't allow registered sex offenders to live within 1,000 feet of a school. I feel bad for anyone who works for me. I feel bad for it. We don't allow handgun dealers to sell, to operate within 1,000 feet of schools. Those of you who have medical marijuana dispensaries, I think there's a lot of you out there in states that have this. We don't allow those near schools, but we do allow tobacco retailers near schools. And we're finding areas that have 5, 10, 15 tobacco retailers within 1,000 feet of schools. And I think we really need to turn the tide and begin to make a change and change some of the zoning and licensing policies so that we can make a difference here on this product. We're seeing New Orleans City Council recently ban tobacco sales near schools. So we're starting to see that policy. It's happened in Santa Clara County, California. It's happening in more and more communities. And I think this is going to be a trend for the future. Some of the tools I'm going to talk about help communities advocate for these kind of policies. The second part of the talk, I'm talking about some of these resources that we've made. The first one is a website called countertobacco.org, and our target audience with this is really just anyone who are practitioners who do work in the point of sale and tobacco control. And it's a website funded by CDC. It has a whole. I'm going to show just a couple of screens from the website. It has about 5,000 unique visits to the site so far, and we have people in 12 countries using the site. Going to the left, I'm going to talk about a mobile store audit system that we use that links to our website that helps people collect data in their communities about tobacco retailing, and it can be used to collect data on food environments. We've been using it for collecting information on food environments, pricing of food, availability of healthy and unhealthy products. We're also doing it on alcohol, so you can actually, and physical activity, things about stores like whether they have sidewalks, bike racks, street lighting, the safety of the quality of the sidewalk. We're doing a whole series of built environment physical activity measures. We're doing fourfold assessments using this mobile system, so we're hitting multiple behaviors at once. On the bottom, we'll talk about a GIS mapping system we've developed with a nonprofit in California called Green Info that helps average people use a GIS system. How many people here know how to use a GIS system with ArcInfo, ArcView? So we've probably got, it looks like maybe 10% of the audience, 15%. But I guarantee you that if after about a 20-minute demo, almost all of you would be able to use the system that we've developed. We just had high school students last week in Charlotte do it, and we give them a whole series of tasks. So we're trying to make this much more open and accessible. And lastly, there's a simulation model we're developing with Stanford and WashU. It's led by leaders, Doug Luke at Washington University, that helps create systems and an agent-based model that lets you know what the smoking rates would change by if you were to implement certain policies. This, again, will help communities do some of this kind of work. This is the homepage of our Counter Tobacco website. We talk about the issue of the how the tobacco companies advertise and market their product in the section called War in the Store, because there's a We're at battle with the tobacco companies who want to have lots of advertising saturating the store. They want cheap prices. They want signs. They're also at battle not just with us in the tobacco control community, but they're fighting the other tobacco companies, so Philip Morris and RJR. They're also battling Frito-Lay because Doritos wants to be all the prime space. They're battling Pepsi and other beverage companies. There's a whole battle going on in the store. We talk a little bit about that here. We talk about the policy solution. So when we talk about there's too much advertising for a greater density, when we talk about that, we talk about ways that you can fix some of the problems. And so there's a whole thing on how you can use licensing and zoning laws, how you can restrict marketing, point of sale health warnings, and so forth. We have an image gallery, so if you want to advocate and just look at the amount of advertising, you can kind of download pictures. We've had images from almost a dozen states now, from all the way from Hawaii to South Carolina. These are just ads. Next time you go out, as you're buying gas or going to convenience stores, you'll start seeing all the types of ads, because once you start doing these assessments and start thinking about point of sale, you'll look at how many things are out there. Here's a store that, it's got Budweiser on the inside of the door, Marlboro, it's got a Davidoff, it's got a whole series of ads. This is just basically all beer and alcohol and tobacco ads in it. Powerwall, so right behind the counter, you'll see Marlboro owns that space. Every retailer wants it, but yet the tobacco companies have it in most places. We're seeing on the far left, one of our users from Hawaii uploaded this photo, and when they released a Surgeon General's report on smoking, CNN used this as one of their cover on their evening newscast. Tobacco companies put, you'll see a large relationship between tobacco ads near candy. So here we're seeing sort of fruity snacks and Maverick and smokeless tobacco products. You're seeing ads for Newport right near Starburst candy and other candies. We're seeing anywhere from 20 to 50% of stores putting ads and product right next to candy. You'll see on the far left here, you see these Philly's Blunts. They have chocolate, orange, strawberry, cherry, a whole series of flavors. After the U.S. Food and Drug Administration banned all candy and fruit flavors in cigarettes, the first thing that happened is all of the little cigar manufacturers started just expanding like crazy, the different types of candy and fruit flavors they'd offer. You'll also see that these are single sales. It's very popular in stores near schools to sell single flavored grape cigars for 49 cents. And so these are things that should be banned. And we want to help people collect the information to make the case for policy change. Operation Storefront was done in California about 20 years ago. Has a whole series of assessments of ads and product and so forth. You walk in with a clipboard and you work with youth. At the time, I think it was a fantastic program, and many people here may have even used it. Right now, at today's age, it's a little bit of a one-size-fits-all. It's getting a little bit dated, but you can sort of check off how many ads you see and so forth. Now we have a store audit form that works on the iPad and iPhone and Android phones, any tablet, actually. And so what it does is it allows you to build a form. We have about 12 modules, and you can pick items. If you live in an urban environment and menthol is really big, we have a whole item bank of menthol items. You can just select the ones you want, custom build your form. If you're in a rural area and smokeless tobacco is big, you can add questions on that. If you're worried about emerging products like e-cigarettes, we have a set of questions on that. So it allows you to sort of custom build an audit. There's a coordinator who would create a team and assign stores to teams. And so you may go out with 10 kids on a weekend to collect information like this in your community, and then you'll assign, create your 10 teams, and then a group member gets a map. They get a map, and they visit their stores. They take photos with the iPhone or the iPad. They get a little maps that'll show them exactly where they're supposed to visit the stores. They can even add new stores in the field if they want to. It has a series of items on the outside of the store, the inside, and everything. Again, we have modules that we've developed too that also work for food environments, so that allows you to sort of collect all of this. It used to be it would take you about a week or two to check all the hash marks off and put it in Excel and analyze it. But this, by the time you're actually done with your last store, the data is fully analyzed for you and all set up in the cloud. If you're interested in tracking cigarette prices near schools, these are Swisher Sweets, peach-flavored cigarettes, little cigars. You can track that. You can track the price of Marlboro cigarettes and then compare stores near schools versus ones far from schools. Are the prices different? Are the product offerings different? is the density different? This is right near me in North Carolina. This is Durham County. The areas that are the darkest blue are the wealthiest. The lightest yellow are the lowest income areas. And the size of the red circle is that means that there are more tobacco retailers. Again, you can kind of see that in the higher income bluer areas, you're not seeing many retailers. They're kind of clustered in the downtown lower income area. If I were to do percent African American, the map is just about the same. You see these great disparities in the locations of these, and there's a whole set of policies that can easily fix this if you help make the case for mapping it. We have a mapping tool that we have. This is a map showing every tobacco retailer in the state in red. We can map it by county, school district, U.S. House, NC House, NC Senate, or whatever. So we can find, if you want to look at your school district, how you compare, and we can go to policymakers and show them how many retailers they have in their area, the density, a whole series of metrics, the percent that sell cigarettes to minors. That's what this is done by school district. This county, Mecklenburg, is doing fairly well by that measure. We have stuff where you can actually show these are little school icons, dark blue for public schools, lighter blue, teal for private. But you can see it's green if they've not been selling to minors, it's yellow if they've sold once, and red if they sold two or more times. So you can begin to see the whole violation history on an easy map that's just as easy to manipulate as Google Maps. This brings up a little pink buffer zone around all of the schools, and then the retailers light up in red if they're near schools, whereas they're a charcoal gray if they're not near schools. And so you can begin to visualize this. You can also, this is one that, as I mentioned, you can see in red the ones that have sold two or more times to minors. You can print little reports. I printed one in for Charlotte, and we can see how many retailers are near schools, like that measure that Lisa Henriksen used, half a mile. So we have 131 retailers in Northwest Charlotte that are within 1,000 feet of either a school or a park. So it has the list of all of these, too. It lists them so that you could visit them if you wanted. We've created a new measure called tobacco swamps, kind of like a food swamp. But this is if you have more than 1.5 tobacco retailers per 1,000 people. So this is kind of an excessive number. So we map the parts of the areas that have swamps. And this can help you work on licensing policies that will actually fix this. So that really concludes my remarks. I just wanted to talk about an audit system that will help you collect data that exposes what the problems are, and then sort of a mapping system that helps people visualize what the extent of the problem is, and to help really make sort of policy change so that we can begin to make change in the built environment and really take these findings that researchers are doing at point of sale on density, the amount of advertising, and so forth, and actually make it more accessible for practitioners to make a difference. Thank you. Thank you.